Okay, we're going to start here on the top of Tedem and Aleph, sixth line down. So the Gemara is discussing what we left off with yesterday, which is the Ein Ma'arvim Simcha B'Simcha. Gemara took it for granted and then went through the whole Gemara here that there is this principle called Ein Ma'arvim Simcha B'Simcha. That didn't allow to mix up two different types of Simcha. Yesterday we discussed the possibility as to whether that is an independent statement, independent of a Samachta B'Chagecha V'lo B'Ishtecha, or the two are basically the two sides of the same coin, and the possible nafkaminot between those two different reasons. But as a assumption, the Gemara worked through that Ein Ma'arvim Simcha B'Simcha, that was a given. Now the Gemara wants to understand, where's the source for this idea that Ein Ma'arvim Simcha B'Simcha? And that's what the Gemara asks here. Ein Ma'arvim Simcha B'Simcha Minolan. Where do we know that from? Dichtiv. We know this from the consecration of the Beit HaMikdash in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. It says then, Vayas Shlomo Beitahi Etachag V'chol Yisrael Imo Ka'al Gadol Milavo Chamat Ad Nachal Mitzrayim Lifnei Hashem Elokeinu Shivat Yamim V'Shivat Yamim Arba Asar Yom. So we have seen some of these psukim before, but they made a large party for the consecration of the Mikdash. It's Bereach Eitanim, Yerach Eitanim, which we saw before is the month of Tishrei. In the month of Tishrei, they have this 14-day celebration, which is comprised of 2 7-day units that make up the 14-day celebration for the consecration of the Mikdash. The assumption being that the latter 7 days are the 7 days of Sukkot, and the first 7 days are the 7 days that preceded the 7 days of Sukkot. So Gemara says, if imita demarvim simcha b'simcha, if you're allowed to overlap different types of smachot, ibayle de mintar alechag. He should have waited until Sukkot, umi'avid shiva l'hocho l'hocho, and then he should have combined the celebration of the consecration of the Mikdash, the 7-day celebration for the Mikdash, along with the 7-day celebration of Sukkot. As Tosfot says over here, we've seen this before with regards to Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Hashanah, ibad mintar arachag is g'day shlo yibatlu Yisrael mimlachtan kolkach. They have to take off 2 weeks from work. That's a long time. You know, 7 days is already enough. 2 weeks from work, that's a lot of time to take off. So he should have combined them together and put the two celebrations on the same 7-day period. Why is it that he didn't do that? B'dilma, Gemara says, Mintar lo natrinon. Beheche di drami of dinon. So maybe you're right. Maybe we don't postpone it. Maybe you're right in the assumption here that the Ein Ma'arvim Simcha B'Simcha, and therefore you do not postpone the celebration of the consecration of the Mikdash until Sukkot. But on the other hand, what happens if it happens to fall out that way? The only thing you've shown me from here is that we don't intentionally postpone a celebration to be together with another celebration. But if Hecha Ditrame Avdinon, but when it fell out, if it happened to fall out on Sukkot, maybe you could have the consecration of the Mikdash during that period of time. It was just a practical question. The completion of the Avoda took place once they entered into Tishrei, and therefore they had the celebration for the consecration of the Mikdash then. But had it been 7 days later, Ein Ochanami, they would have had the celebration of the Mikdash on top of Sukkot without any problem. Gemara says, wait, if that was true, that wherever it fell out, you could celebrate it, then Ibayle Lishu'ure Purta. He should have left over a little bit. They shouldn't have finished the construction of the Mikdash. They should have left over something and then completed the construction on Sukkot or right before Sukkot so that you could celebrate them together those 7-day periods. It says, Shiurei Binyan Beit HaMikdash Lo Mishayirinan. We don't leave over the building in the Mikdash. When you build the Mikdash, you do it and you finish it. You don't leave it over. So Gemara says, okay, so you're not going to leave over something major, but Ibayle Lishiurei Ba'ama Kalia Orev. You should have left over the Ama of the Orev. Now the Ama of the Kalia Orev, if Machloket Rishonim, what exactly this is, Rashi claims it's the top of the Kodesh HaKodeshim that came to a point that was an Ama by an Ama, meaning that the top, the point, was not actually a point, but it was a flat surface that was an Ama by an Ama, and the birds would like to land there, so they put up spikes there so that the birds would not land there. Others suggest that it's the spikes that were around the edges of the Kodesh, the Heichal of the Kodesh HaKodesh Kodeshim, to prevent the birds from roosting over there, from the pigeons coming there. As to why it's a problem, either it's a problem because of Tumah, we're afraid that they're going to bring Tumah, and when they're perching there, they're going to bring Tumah into the Mikdash, it would be problematic. Others say it's just a lack of kavod, to have the pigeons there, and to have all their droppings, and to live there, as is well known will cause it to be a place that's not of kavod, and therefore they put up the spikes in order to stop the pigeons from coming or the doves from coming there. There is a 2 dayot in Tosafot as to whether the Ama Kaliorev existed in the first Beit HaMikdash. Tosafot claims that in the first Beit HaMikdash, since the Shekhinah was present, the birds didn't come there because of the presence of the Shekhinah, and therefore they only needed the Ama Kaliorev in the second Beit HaMikdash. On the other hand, there's another day in Tosfot that believes that the Ami HaKal Yorev was there even in the first Beit HaMikdash, and his proof is from our Gemara. Our Gemara over here suggests that in the Binyan of Shlomo, they should have postponed it and left over this Ami HaKal Yorev. So it suggests that there was this Kal Yorev in the first Beit HaMikdash. You could have argued that in the first Beit HaMikdash it existed from the time of Yoshiyahu HaMelech and onwards, from the time it appeared that the Shekhinah already leaves the Mikdash, so that's when they had in the first Beit HaMikdash, but here the Gemara is clearly talking about at the beginning of the consecration of the Mikdash, and it's asking about this. Gemara says, that's not something you can leave over, because it's an integral part of the building process, and so you can't leave it over. So that wasn't an option. So since there was no option in terms of postponing it, we really don't know what the din is with regards to what happens if it randomly fell out on the same time period. We do understand when it falls out at different periods, you cannot postpone it in order to combine the celebrations, but if it happens to be that they fell out together, what would be the din in that case? And obviously that would impact our situation, which is, if the wedding turned out to be then during Chol HaMoed, is that okay? Meaning that you may not be able to postpone it, but if that's when the date was and that's when it came out, maybe you'd be able to do it then. So when it says, Ela Mediyater Kra, we have an extra pasuk, Michte. Pasuk says, Ktiv Arba Asar Yom. It says they had a celebration for 14 days. Shiva yamim v'shivat yamim lomali. Why do I have to have shivat yamim arba asar yom? I mean, they're doing the addition for you. We don't need them to do the addition. 7 plus 7 is 14. So why does it stay both of them? Shema mina, hani l'chud v'hani l'chud. That comes to teach you that each 7-day unit stood on its own, was an independent unit, and they could not be combined. So from that extraneous part of the pasuk, we learn out not only could you not postpone it in order to celebrate on the same day, but you also could not, even if it fell out together, have the celebrations go simultaneously, because they would be mutually exclusive. That's Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. So now, Amar Rabbi Parnach, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Oto Shana Lo Asu Yisrael Et Yom HaKippurim. What's obvious from this is on that year, Bnei Yisrael did not celebrate Yom Kippur, because if you do 7 days of Sukkot, and you have a celebration that was 7 days prior to Sukkot, well, in the 7 days prior to Sukkot, there's also Yom HaKippurim is in that period of time. And they were worried that maybe the enemies of Israel were deserving of annihilation. Obviously, this is a euphemism that Bnei Israel were deserving of this. A heavenly voice came out and says to them, all of you are deserving of Olam Haba. The overriding of Yom Kippur was justified in this case. My Dorush. What was the drasha that allowed them to override Yom Kippurim? Amru Kal V'Chomer. They did a Kal V'Chomer, which is one of the Shloshes Sri Midot Shator Nidresh Behem. Umam Mishkan She'en Kedushato Kedushat Olam. The Mishkan, which only is a temporary dwelling for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'Korban Yachid Doche HaShabbat. And the Korban of an individual was still Doche Shabbat, even though it's an Iser Skila, because that is the Korbanot of the Nisim. The Nisim brought the 12 Korbanot, and for the first 12 days of the consecration of the Mishkan, the Korbanot of the Nisim are Korbanot Yachid, and despite the fact that they're Korbanot Yachid, we allow them to override Shabbat. They're Doche Shabbat, because we do it 12 days consecutively. Those 12 days, each day they do it, in those 12 days there's at least one Shabbat, if not two Shabbatot, that fall out during that period of time, and they still brought the Korbanot. So here you have a Korban Yachid. It's overriding Shabbat, which is at the highest form of punishment, which is Skila. And for a Korban Yachid, we allow you to override it because it's the consecration of the Mishkan. Mikdash, the Kedushato, Kedushat Olam. Mikdash, which has permanent Kedusha. Right? This is not so simple because it's a machloket all over Shas, whether the Kitcha the Shait or the Kitcha the Atid Avo. It might be here that it means Kedushato, Kedushat Olam means that the location of the Mikdash is then chosen, and that's the permanent location of the Mikdash, which is Kedushato, Kedushat Olam. It's a permanent residence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'Korban Tzibur. And over here we're talking about Korbanot HaTzibur, because the Korbanot that were brought in the consecration of the Mikdash were Korbanot HaTzibur. V'yom HaKippurim, and now you're trying to override Yom Kippur, the Anush Karet. That is only an Anush Karet, which is a step below Shabbat. Lo Kol Shekein, then certainly it should be overridden. So here you have in favor in the Mikdash versus Mishkan is when you have Kedushat Olam versus Kedushat Sha'ah. You have Korbanot Tzibur instead of Korbanot Yachid. And you're overriding Yom Kippur, which is a Chiyuv Karet, versus overriding Shabbat, which is a Chiyuv Skila. So it seems like it should be justified in overriding Yom HaKippurim. So Mar says, El Amai, Hayu Doagim. So what were they worried about? If they had this great Kal V'chomer, it seems to me they have a pretty good argument over here. Why were they worried about it? It says, Hotam Tzaruch Gevoha, Hacha Tzaruch Edyot. Difference is between the usage of the Korbanot. In the Korbanot, or for the Korbanot of the Nisim, those were olot, those were chataot, those were things that were given to Gvoa, they belonged to Hashem. They were korbanot that were donated, in a sense, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hacha, over here, the korbanot that they brought in the consecration of the Mikdash were eaten by the people. That was part of the festivities, that was part of the celebration, was eating the korbanot that they brought. So there is some difference here that the Mishkan has Tzorach Gvoa, and here we have Tzorach Hadyot. So where it says, Hachanami mi avid the avdu, mecha lo nechlu velo lishtu. Where it says, okay, why don't we do this? Why don't they bring the korbanot on Yom Kippur? Just don't eat and don't drink, and then you won't have a problem. Just like by the korbanot of the Nisim, they overrode Shabbat in terms of bringing the korban, do the same thing by Yom Kippur. The korbanot will override Yom Kippur, but the eating and drinking will still be in place. Where it says, Ein simcha b'lo achila v'shtia. There's no such celebration without eating and drinking. Eating and drinking, especially of Korbanot, of the Shlamim, is an integral part of the celebration of the Simcha, and to have a day of fasting in the middle would detract from the Simcha, would not be considered to be the consecration of Mikdash b'Simcha. That might relate to the fact that when it comes to Simcha and the bringing of Korbanot, there is a correlation between the bringing of a Korbanot and the Yom Tov that an individual experiences. We see that in other Gemaras, that when a person brings a Korban, it's like a private Yom Tov for him on that day. But there's also, we see that by the davening on Shabbat, at least according to the Nusach Ashkenaz, which is that the extra korban that we add on Shabbat, the korban ha-musaf, in Tefillah Musafim, we say, Yismichu b'malchutcha, shomei Shabbat koreyonek, that the Yismichu b'malchutcha, that extra simcha is associated with the korban musaf, which is the extra korban of Shabbat, and not just with all the Tefillah to Shabbat, and not just the Shabbat in general, but specifically with the extra korban. So we see that there is connection between the bringing of a korban and the simcha that is experienced, meaning the simcha of participating in the korban and eating the korban. That's why it wasn't enough to simply bring the korbanot. They had to eat and they had to enjoy the korbanot in order to experience that bringing of the korban and having the proper simcha that's connected to the havata korban, that is really like a yom tov for the individual. Mar says, okay, Mishkan d'dochi Shabbat milon nalan. You took for granted that by the Mishkan, the 12 Nisim overrode Shabbat. How do you know that's true? Because it says in the Pasuk, Beyom HaRishon uBeyom HaShvi'i. On the first day, Nachshon ben Aminadav brings it. And then on the seventh day, you have the Nasi who brings his Korban. So what does it mean? The first day is one day, Shvi'i is Shabbat. So that's the seventh day. Dilma Shvi'i the Korbanot. Who says the seven here really means the seventh day of the week? It could mean the seventh of the Nisim to bring Korbanot. Samar of Nachma Yitzchak Amakra, the Pasuk says, Beyom Ashte Asar Yom, on the 11th day. But over here it says the word Yom twice. Beyom, on the day, Ashte Asar Yom, of the 11th day. Ma Yom Kulo Ratzuf, just like a day is continuous and contiguous, Af Ashte Asar, so too the 11th day, Kulan Ritzufim. All those days were contiguous or continuous, and there was no gapping in between. They didn't skip Shabbat for the Korbanot Tanisim. So it's okay. Gemara says, V'dilma Yamim Haru'im. So when it says, how do you know that's what it means? It could mean that every day that was available to bring the korbanot, a korban was brought on that day. Maybe that's the solution to the problem. Tiv krach rina. We have another pasuk that says, b'yom shneimasar yom. So we have an additional yom here again by the 12th day. Ma yom kulo ratzuf, av shneimasar yom kulan ritzufim. When it says, v'dilma hachanami yamim haruim. You can answer the same we did by the 11th day. That the Yom is just teaching, yes, they're continuous, but continuous on days that can be used. Shabbat is excluded from that. When it says, Imkein Trei Karai Lomali. Why do you have the Torah have to repeat it twice? The extraneous Yom twice is not going to teach us that. So that's how we know that the Korbanot and Nisim overrode the din of Shabbat in the consecration of the Mishkan. How do we know that the Mikdash overrode Yom Kippur? Maybe because it says there they celebrated for 14 days. Dilma the same way. Yamim Haruim. These were days that were available. Yom Kippur is excluded from that. It says Gamar Yom Yom Mehotam. We have a Gzera Shava of Yom here to the Yom that is mentioned by the Nisi'im. And since the Yom by Nisi'im meant contiguous, overriding everything, so too over here. The Yom means, Arbasa Yom means 14 straight days, including overriding Yom Kippur and, of course, overriding Shabbat as well. Right, well, your question's a fair question, which is, where do we get the 7-day celebration from? Because the only precedent we have for this is the 12-day celebration of the Nisi'im. So if Shlomo Melech was going to put on a celebration, he should put on a 12-day celebration, not a 7-day celebration. So I guess the question's fair, and where do the 7 days come from? But it's not that it should be zero. We do have a precedent of having a 12-day celebration for the consecration. We also do find that 7 days is a unit of celebration for all the regalim, meaning for Pesach, for Sukkot, the 7-day unit is a unit of celebration. My assumption is that that's what drove Shlomo Melech, that 7 days is a unit of celebration, and therefore he was going to have a 7-day celebration for the consecration of the Mikdash. So I think that's probably the source or the reason for why he made it into a 7-day holiday. Now, as to when it started, we saw before in the Gemara that that wasn't optional. It was that whenever they finished the Mikdash, that's when they started the celebration. So the Mikdash finished on the, whether it's the 7th or 8th day of Tishrei, and then they began the celebration right away. Now, this Gemara over here actually has an impact, a machloket in the Achronim, as to the rules of a siyum. Are you allowed to postpone a siyum in order for the most reasons that people do this is in order to have the siyum during, for instance, the 9 days, or they want to eat meat during the 9 days, so they postpone a siyum to the 9 days. Are you allowed to postpone a siyum in order to do the siyum then and then have the celebration then? Or do you have to do the celebration as soon as you finish? Whenever you finish, that's when you got to do the siyum. So the machloket revolves around the reading of this Gemara, right? The Gemara on one hand says there's no postponement. Whenever it ends, you got to have the celebration then. So that's one side that says whenever you have the siyum, that's when you got to do it. You can't postpone the siyum. On the other hand, the Gemara over here entertains the possibility that had there been work left over from the Mikdash, that you could have postponed it. It's just the fact that we don't postpone work in the Mikdash. But had you been able to postpone work in the Mikdash, then you could have actually determined the day on which it fell out. So he suggests, well, by a siyum of the Sechta, they were not governed by the rules of not postponing Binyan HaMikdash. And so therefore, maybe over there you can postpone the siyum by leaving out the last piece. By not finishing off the Sechta and leaving out the last piece, you can postpone it. Whenever you do that last piece, that becomes the period of time when the celebration takes place. So I'm seeing a machlok in the Achronim that's actually premised in our Gemara here. This is the central source for this idea of, first of all, celebrating a siyum. And number two is, what determines when you celebrate the siyum? Is it when you finish, no matter what? Or can you actually direct it or postpone it by leaving out a portion of the siyum? And again, it has an afkamina for things like Tanit Bechorot, where they want to do a siyum then, or for the 9 days where some of the places need to eat meat, or camps need to eat meat, and they want to make a siyum. So all of those are affected by this discussion here as to whether you can postpone a siyum in order to direct it to a specific day. Okay, Yatzta Batko, Ve'amra lahem kuchem muzumanim l'chayel mabah. All of you are invited to chayel mabah, meaning that you were forgiven for the sin of Yom HaKippurim. Uminolon do'ochel luhu. How do you know they were forgiven? Titani tachlifa. We have a Tanaic word from tachlifa. B'yom hashmini shalach et ha'am. Shlomo HaMelech sends the people back on the 8th day. Vayivarchu et ha'melech. They give a bracha to the melech. They go back to their tents, they go back home. Smechim, happy, v'tove lev, and a good heart. Al kol tova, on all the good asher asa Hashem le David avdo, that Hashem did for David, uli Yisrael amo, and for Israel's nation. So now they're going to be bright to hear, explain to us each of these things. Lo halehem, they went back home. Shalchu matzu nishem betara. Everybody got home, found that their wives were not nidot, and they were tehorim. Smechim, why were they happy? Shenenu miziv ha-shechina. Because they had enjoyed the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By the way, this is an important factor. It's a very part of fundamental part of our philosophy, which is that the only real simcha in life is shenenu miziv ha-shechina. The only type of simcha, it's not a material simcha. It's not the ephemeral simcha that we experience, but it's the one simcha which is permanent. That's how they know that everybody was happy. How were they so certain that everybody was smechim? And how were they certain that when everybody got home, they were sameach? Because they all were ne'aneh miziv ha-shechinah. They all had experienced the presence of the Shekhinah. And that's the only type of simcha that's everlasting. And that's the type of simcha that there's no question that everybody had it. So there were no questions that anybody was happy. Everybody was happy because they had reached the ultimate form of happiness, which is the experience of the Shekhinah. And that's what we strive towards, and this is what we aspire to, is to experience that. The ne'anim is ziv ha-shechinah. That's what it says, la'atid lavo, the tzaddikim are sitting around, and their ne'anim is ziv ha-shechinah. That's the ultimate form of simcha that one can have, and the one that we try to work towards in our lifetime. B'tuv elev, they were in a good spirits, good heart. Shekol echad v'echad nit'abra yishto b'ben zachar. All of their wives became impregnated with a male child. Al kol ha-tova, and all the good. She'atzta bat kol v'amra lahem kuchem muzunamim l'chayol ha-maba. That's the good, which is that the bat kol came out and told them that they were all l'chayol ha-maba, and they were forgiven for that sin of Yom HaKippurim. So that's how they knew they were forgiven for that sin. The David of Do with Yisrael Amo. B'ishlamo l'Yisrael Amo. I understand all the good that was done to Yisrael. They were all present there. Da'achiluhu avon Yom HaKippurim. Because they were forgiven for overriding Yom Kippur that year, and they were beneficiaries of all the good. Elo the David of Do. What does David have to do with this? Mahi, why is that relevant here? Amar Rav Yehuda Amarav, b'shoah shebikesh Shlomo lahachnis aron lemikdash. He wanted to bring in the aron to the mikdash. Davku she'arim ze lezeh. The gates held fast together and would not open in order to allow the aron to come in. Amar Shlomo esirim ve'arba rinonot. He said 24 tefillot supplications v'lo ne'aneh, and he was not answered. Rashi tells us, what are the 24 rinonot? Is Ktive Beparshat Ben Rina V'Tchina Tfila Bakasha. In the Tfilat Shlomo, these words, Rina, Tchina, Tfila, Bakasha, are mentioned 24 times. So those are the 24 supplications he made of Hashem. Velo Nene, he wasn't answered. Patach V'Amar, he said, Susharim Hashechem, you gates, open up your heads, you know, go wide open to let us in. Velo Nene, he was not answered. They said that Perakintilim didn't help him, came in, Shamar. Hashem Elokim, this is the final pasuk in the Tefillat Shlomo that's found in Divrei Yamim, not in Melachim Aleph, but in Divrei Yamim it says, Hashem Elokim, Al Teshev Pnei Mishichecha, do not turn back, do not reject the face of your anointed one, Zachra Lechazdei David Avdecha. Remember the generosity, the chasadim that were done by David, your servant. Miyad Nene, right away he was answered. At that point, the enemies of David, their faces turned black like the bottom of a pot. The bottom of a pot is blackened because it's right on the coals, on the fire, so it's very black. So like the bottom of a pot that's extremely black, their faces turned black because now they realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shemachalu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tovon, Hashem had forgiven him for the sin with Bathsheba and Uriah Chiti, and therefore Hashem was, quote-unquote, now on David's side. And anybody who was against David was going to suffer the consequences of being against David. So all of his enemies now were afraid. Rabbi Yonatan ben Asmai, Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim, Tanu Parshat Nidarim, Bei Rabbi Shimon Yochai. They learned the Parsha of Nidarim, they were studying Parshat Nidarim, by Rabbi Shimon Yochai. If terminei ba'urta. At night, they departed from him, and they spoke to him about it. They took leave from him, and they spoke to him. The Tzafra, in the morning, Hador, they came back, and they tried to take leave of him again. They spoke to him again, take leave, to, you know, good wishes, and to say goodbye. Didn't you already take leave last night? What are you coming back again? You taught us. A student that's leaving his Rebbe, and he remains overnight in the city. He has to go back and ask for leave again in the morning. The respectable thing to do is to take leave, but if you stay overnight and you're there for another day, you have to go again to get permission and to get a bracha and to leave. Shenamar, how do we know this? From our story over here. Bayom ha-shmini shalach et ha'am, vayavarchu et ha-melech. It says on the eighth day, he sent the people to go, and they gave a bracha to the king. Uchtiv, and then it says, vayom ha-shmini shalach et ha'am, vayavarchu et ha-melech, and the 23rd of the seventh month, shalach et ha'am. He sent the people away. So what do you mean, shalach et ha'am? He already sent them away on the 8th day, on the 22nd. Why is he sending them on the 23rd? Let me count the Talmid and Niftami Rabo. V'lan bo'tah year. If you take the part, you leave your Rebbe, but you stay overnight in the city. It's directly pater, menu pam acheret. You have to take leave again. And that's what they did. They took leave from Shlomo again. They went back on the 23rd to take leave from him again. So Amarle Librei, Rav Shimon bar Yochai says to his son, Rav Elazar, B'nei Adam Alalu Anashim Shel Tzura. These individuals are people of countenance, people of stature. Heim Zil Gabehon Delevarchucha. Go to follow them and see that they give you a bracha. Azal, he went, Ashkechinu Dukam Ramu Krai Hadodi. They saw that they were reconciling psukim that seemingly were contradictory. It says, K'tiv Pales Magal Raglecha, V'chod Dirachecha Yikonu. A person should ponder, weigh, Magal Raglecha, the path of your feet, V'chod Dirachecha, and all your ways, Yikonu, should be right or should be set straight. And that a person should be measured in how they go, and they should weigh their path. But then, Uchtiv, and then we have another pasuk in the subsequent parak in Mishlei, which says, Orechamim Pentifales. It's talking about there, it talks about this person is lost, Magalna is going all over the place. It says, Orechaim, the way of life, Pentifales, doesn't take heed. Orechaim, the way of life, doesn't take heed, meaning that it's not looking to weigh or to determine the proper path. So one way it says that life is a very planned outcome, and the other one says that life happens, and that you can't really weigh, and you can't really ponder what's going to be. So kasha, kan v'mitzvah she'efshar l'sota al yedei achirim. This is a mitzvah that can be done by others. Kan v'mitzvah she'efshar l'sota al yedei achirim. Here's a mitzvah that can't be done by others. All right, we'll come back and discuss this in a second. Hadar yatve, v'kami bali. Now, Lailahu, then they said another contradiction. Div, the pasuk says, Mishle yikarahi mipninim. Bechol chafatzecha lo yishvu ba. Says that it is more precious than the precious stones or the rubies. Bechol chafatzecha and all your desires, lo yishvu ba, will not equate to it. Ha? You will medayik from here that it's written in the possessive form, chafatzecha. That's chavatzecha surim, velo chefsei shamayim. That's how we use it in other places. Also here, ha chefsei shamayim yishavu ba. That it will be, that chefsei shamayim would equate to it. V'chtiv, and also says, v'chol chafatzim lo yishavu ba. There's nothing, there's no desire in the world that will be equated to it. And again, it has there that chokhma is yikara mipninim. It's a very similar pasuk in Mishlei. Tafil chefsei shamayim lo yishavu ba. That even chefsei shamayim, even doing mitzvot, lo yishavu ba, will not be equated to it. Umar answers again, kan b'mitzvah she'efshar l'asot al yedei acharim. Kan b'mitzvah she'efshar l'asot al yedei acharim. This is a mitzvah that can be done by others. Here's a mitzvah that cannot be done by others. All right, now, let's start with the second case here, where they explain that it has to do with the mitzvah that can be done by others and not done by others. Over here, we're talking about limud ha-Torah, person who is learning Torah. So a person who is learning Torah and then is faced with the opportunity of doing a mitzvah, it depends on the mitzvah. If the mitzvah is something that can be handled by other people, then one should not interrupt their Torah learning, which it itself is a mitzvah, and it's also a mitzvah of paramount importance. And therefore, one should not interrupt their learning in order to do the mitzvah, because the mitzvah can be accomplished by someone else, and they can continue to learn. On the other hand, if the mitzvah cannot be accomplished by anyone else, they have to stop their learning in order to do the mitzvah. And that's because, partly the Gemara in Kiddushin, which says that learning is important because learning teaches you lasot. The whole purpose of learning is so that you do the mitzvot. If you're not going to do the mitzvot, then why learn? So they have to interrupt your learning in order to do the mitzvot. And so that's what it means here, that efshar lasot ayidei achrim, alo lasot ayidei achrim, will determine whether you're mevatel Torah in order to do the mitzvah or not do the mitzvah. Now, the previous statement of the Gemara, there was also something that had to do with weighing. And it says, in one case, you weigh the situation out. In the other case, you don't weigh the situation out. And the Gemara again said, it depends if the mitzvah can be done by others or not done by others. So the way Rashi explains over here is that if it's a mitzvah that can't be done by others, then al tifales, don't weigh the options here. Ela mitzvah shebal yadcha ben gdola ben ktana say. When the mitzvah comes to you, you gotta do the first one that comes. You don't weigh and say, oh, this is a bigger mitzvah, this is a smaller mitzvah. You just do the mitzvah that comes first, because there's nobody else can do it. You have to do it, so you deal with it. You deal with that mitzvah. On the other hand, where there's a mitzvah that others can do, then you have the ability to choose. You can make that choice. You can say, listen, I'm going to take the bigger mitzvah and I'll let you do the other mitzvah, because it's efshar le'asot al yedei acharim. It can be done by others. So in that case, you can weigh the mitzvah which you want to do, or weigh the mitzvah that you're going to pass off to someone else. So that's the difference between the case where we say you just got to take it as it comes. There's no weighing things. That's when there's nobody else who can do it. On the other hand, if someone else is present that can help you out with the situation, then you can start making decisions about which mitzvah you do, which mitzvah you pass off to the other individual. Now, the Chacham Tzvi actually quotes this Gemara. We dealt with this when we talked about Osek Mitzvah, Potur Min HaMitzvah, or when we have a clash between two mitzvot, which mitzvah overrides. We discussed this over there, that there is this Radvaz who has a question that was posed to him. If a person is in prison and is given the option to get out of jail for the day, and he can then get out of jail today, daven, put on tefillin, do all those things that day, or he has the option to postpone it and take that vacation day later on and get the day out of prison on Yom Kippur on a special day where he can really get a big bang for his buck to get out of prison for that day and perform the mitzvot. What should he do? The Radbaz says that he should take advantage. When they give him the day off, he should go right away and do the mitzvah. So that's because of the principle that we know, which is mitzvah b'adiyodcha al tachmitzena. If you have a chance to do a mitzvah, don't pass up on it. So it's over here. If you had a chance to do a mitzvah, don't pass up on it. Go right away and take the vacation. Now, the question is, how does he know that that's true even when the mitzvot are of different weights? That might be true when they're of equal weight. But who says when you have a great mitzvah and a small mitzvah that you should still say mitzvah b'adiyodcha al tachmitzena? The answer, the Chacham Tzvi, is from our Gemara right here. Our Gemara over here says that, we just saw it in Rashi, that where there's mitzvah cannot be done by others, there's no weighing of mitzvot. Whichever mitzvah comes first, you do, even if it's the smaller mitzvah. And from this, he says that that's the source for the Radvaz's psak, that when you're in prison, you take the first day you can get, and you do whatever mitzvah comes to your hands, because mitzvah b'yadcha al tachmitzena. All right, so then there are others who suggest over here that the situation here, what the Gemara is discussing over here, is when you have two mitzvot that come together at the same time to an individual, and he's now trying to make a choice about which one he should do. So the Gemara tells us here that if one of the mitzvot can be done by someone else, then a person can do whichever mitzvah cannot be done by the other person, even if it's the smaller mitzvah. Since both mitzvot are going to be accomplished in the end, then since the other person can do this, you can take on the smaller mitzvah and do the smaller mitzvah because the other mitzvah are going to be accomplished. And that way you accomplish both mitzvot. On the other hand, if neither the mitzvot can be done by someone else, then a person should choose the bigger mitzvah to do first. So it seemingly, this explanation is against what Rashi says over here. This is the Marsha's explanation of the Gemara. And that seemingly is in contradiction to Rashi's explanation. Rashi says you just do whatever mitzvah comes first. It's the smaller mitzvah. Then the Marsha says here, just the opposite, that when you can't be done by others, you pick the bigger mitzvah. But the truth is that you could actually reconcile the two positions because it might be talking about two different cases. The Marsha is talking about a case where both mitzvot are available to you right now. When both mitzvot are available to you right now, and it's a mitzvah so that cannot be done by others, then you pick the bigger mitzvah. Since you have a choice in the mitzvah, you may as well pick the bigger mitzvah. On the other hand, where you have the opportunity for someone else to do the mitzvah, and then the smaller mitzvah can be done by you, then you're forced to take the smaller mitzvah because that way both mitzvot get accomplished. On the other hand, Rashi is just explaining a case where it's sequential. You bumped into a smaller mitzvah, and then you're going to bump into a larger mitzvah. So we don't say wait for the larger mitzvah. We say if you bumped into the smaller mitzvah first, you got to deal with the smaller mitzvah because it can't be done by others. On the other hand, if someone else can do the smaller mitzvah, then you can postpone it. You let it go to the other person, and then you can go over and work with the bigger mitzvah. So they actually might be able to be reconciled because they're talking about two different cases. Rashi's talking about a case where you bumped into the mitzvot sequentially, and therefore the first one that comes to your hand, you got to deal with. On the other hand, the Marsha is talking about a case where the mitzvot are both available to you simultaneously. In that instance, you can pick the bigger mitzvah, like we've seen in the Gemara Megillah, where the more important mitzvot you give precedence to, and they override the mitzvot that are less important in terms of hierarchy. So anyway, we have these explanations here of the Gemara, and this relates a little bit to the sugya of Osik Mitzvah Potur Min HaMitzvah, or the sugya of Mitzvah B'yadcha Al Tachmitzeno. They're all interrelated, depending on what you think the case that is being spoken about is over here. Depending if you think like Rashi or the Marsha, that might have impact to that other sugya as well. All right, so Amru Leih. So these two individuals who had taken part from his father, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that's Rabbi Yehuda B'Geirim and Rabbi Yonatan ben Asamai. So they say to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, what are you doing over here? Why are you with us? So he says, I'll tell you why. So I'm going to who? Tamar li Abba zil gabayu to the varchucha. go to follow them, so they'll give you a bracha. So I'm like, hey, yehi rava, yehi ratzon, shetizra pelo techetzad. You should plant and not harvest, not mow, you know, cut things in the end. Tayal pelo tipok. You should come in and not go out. Tipok, you should go out, pelo tayal, and not come back in. Licharov beitcha, your house should be destroyed. Veleitiv ushpizach, and your hotel or your bed and breakfast should be great. Lubabel betorcha, your table should be a mess. V'lo techezei shata chadatan, you shouldn't see the new year. Skiata the gabi avua. So when Rabbi Shimon got back to his father, Malay, lo mi bai did bruchei lo birchan. Not only did they not give me a bracha, v'al tzurei tzaron. They caused me distress. They upset me. They said things that are terrible. Like, I'm not going to see a new year. My house is going to be destroyed. I'm going to plant and not harvest. These are all negative things. Samalei, my amrucha. What did they say to you? Says, Hachi v'achi amruli. He told over his father what they said. Amalei, anach kulo birkata ninu. Those are all brachot. Let me explain to you. Tiz ravelo techetzad. You should plant and not harvest. Tolid banim, velo yamutu. You'll have give birth to children and they will not die. Tayel velo tipok. What does it mean? Tayal, you should go in. Velo tipok, and they not be sent out. Tayal kalata, your daughters-in-law will join your household. Velo limutu b'neich, or your bincha, your children will not, banecha, will not die. Delifkun, that they will go back to their father's house. So here again, the practice in their day was that the woman left the house of her family and joined the husband's family. So over here, your children, when they married your sons, when they marry your daughters-in-law, then the daughters-in-law will join your family. But if your son passes away, then the daughters-in-law are going to leave and go back to their father's house. So the bracha is, Dayel, the daughters-in-law should join your family, Velo Tipok, and they should not leave, because that means that your children are going to still be living, to have a long life. And the other way around, Tipok Velo Tayel, they should go out and not come back in, which is, Tolid Benata Velo Yamuto Guvrayu. That your daughters should go out, give birth, and be married to men. They will join another family. And then their husbands will stay alive, so that they will not, lehadru levatech, so they don't return to you. Because if their husbands passed away, they return to their father's house. So the idea, again, it's another positive statement, that when your daughters join the other family, they should remain there because things are going well. Lechorov beitcha, veleituv ushpizach. Dehai alma, that's of this world. Ushpizach. Because this world is like the ushpizach, the bed and breakfast, the motel. Vayalma, in that world, is the beta. Now, that world doesn't mean olam haba, that world means the grave. So while you're alive, that's called the motel or the bed and breakfast. When you're dead, that is called your house, tichtiv. Because the pasuk says, kirbam batemo deolam. In their thoughts, or in their innards, they felt, batemo, their houses, leolam, would last forever. So, al tikra kirbam, don't read it as inside of them or their thoughts were, ela kivram, their graves, batame lolam, are their house forever. The grave is your permanent house. So what he was saying to them is that your house should be destroyed, meaning that you should live a long life, so you never have to go visit the house, meaning your permanent house, which is the grave. And you'll live ushbizach, in the bed and breakfast in the motel, that's you'll be living in this olam hazeh, that you'll enjoy Olam Hazeh, and you'll be able to do lots of mitzvot Olam Hazeh. Then, the babel p'torcha, that your table should be overturned or be a mess. Bibane ubnata, you have lots of children, lots of sons and daughters, that'll make it a wild happening at the table. Lo techzei shata chadata, you won't see a new year. Lo tamut intach, your wife should not pass away. Lo tinsav intata acharite, and you won't have to marry another woman. Because when you marry a woman, the Shana Rishona is the Shana Chadasha, the new year, which is the Shana Rishona. So it means that you won't see a new year. It means that you won't have to do another Shana Rishona because your wife will remain alive. So all those were the brachot that they had wished to him. It was all in the interpretation. He had assumed that they were all negative. And his father, Rav Shimon Yochai, explains to him why these are all positive and wonderful brachot that they gave to him. Rav Shimon ben Chalafta, iftar minei derav. He left Rav. Amalei, she says to the Bray, Ziligabei de Rachech. She says to his son, go over to him, say, he'll give you a bracha. So Amalei, he says to him, Yehei Rava, Shebi Hiratzon, Velo Tibayesh, Velo Titbayesh. That you should not cause others shame, Velo Titbayesh, and you should not be shamed. Ate Gabi Avua, I came back to his father. Amalei, my Amalecha, what bracha did you get? So Amalei, Milin Baal, Mahud Amarli, I don't know, he said some stuff that, you know, just regular stuff, nothing important. I shouldn't embarrass people, I shouldn't be embarrassed. Yeah, what's the big deal? Amalei, Barchech, Birkatah, the Birkin, Kudsha, Brichul Yisrael, what do you mean? He gave you the bracha that Akash Baruch Hu gives to Klal Yisrael. Vitonobo. And on that, we learned, Dichtiv, it says, and he repeated it. I mean, that wasn't only once that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it. Ibn Ezo, he did it again. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, V'achaltem achol v'savoa. This is in the Pasuk in Yoel, the parak that we know well from the discussions in Tanit about the Yoreh and the Makosh. It says there, V'achaltem achol v'savoa. You will eat plenty and you will be satisfied. V'alaltem, and you will praise at Hashem Elokeichem. And the Pasuk ends, then, V'lo yavoshu amil olam. And that my nation will no longer be ashamed or embarrassed. And then the next pasuk says, "V'yadatem ki b'kevher v'yisrael ani," and you'll know that I'm amongst Klal Yisrael. And again, the next pasuk ends, "V'lo yevoshu ami le'olam." My nation Israel will no longer be ashamed. So you see over here that this is a bracha. The fact that you should not be shamed is a tremendous bracha. It's a bracha that Akash Baruch gave to Klal Yisrael. Not only gave it once, he gave it twice to them. And as Rashi explains over here, that's exactly what it means. The twice is for the same bracha that was given over here by the story of Rav and Rabbi Shim Bar Chalafto, which is that lo tivayesh v'lo titbayesh. That's the two brachot. You should not shame others. Lo titbayesh, and you should not be shamed by others. So that's the bracha that was given here. Lo yavoshu le'milam, it means in both directions. You should not shame others, and you should not be shamed. And now the Gemara moves on to the next thing in the Mishnah, which is vosei isha tachshita. A woman is allowed to make her jewelry or fix herself up for the Chol HaMoed, for the Yom Tov. Tan Rabban, Elu hein tachshitei nashim. These are the pieces of jewelry or the makeup that a woman can use. Kochelet upokeset umavira sarak al panah. So the first one is kochelet. She's allowed to put on eye makeup or eyeshadow, like a blue eyeshadow. Upokeset, it's not clear what this pokeset is. Rashi claims it's mechaleket seara lekan ulekan. It's making a part in your hair. Rashi in the Gemara in Shabbat explains this a little differently. He talks about pikus, meaning that you plaster down the hair that is on the sides. Tosfot over here says that he doesn't think that the explanation of Rashi is right, that it's mitakenet se'ar shlo yitpazer, it fixed the hair so it doesn't move around, that it's in place. Because he says that we have other explanations that are brought, and he says, v'yesh tefaresh, t'takanat se'ara b'yadeh chutz l'tzaif. This is the fixing of the hair that comes out of her head covering. They put little pieces of dough, dakin al panah l'hadim basar. They put these dough on her face and peel it off to make her face have a rouge look to it, and that's what this pokeset is. The Rabbeinu Chananel over here says pokeset is notelet se'ara b'tziparnah. She cuts her nails and her hair, so she's allowed to do these things. Those are all the pokeset that is mentioned here. And then the last item that's mentioned is mavira srak al panah, that she's allowed to put srak. Now here the question of whether it's srak with a samach or srak with a sin, but over here it means to put on blush on your face, to put on makeup on their face. The Gemara says, Vika damre, that the maveret here means maveret srak al panah, although the alternative girsa is maveret sakin al panah shel mato. That this is to either a srak, means that it uses some sort of depilatory, or a srak, or if the word is sakin, it means a razor, that she can use a razor on her private parts to remove the hair from her private areas. Debitu de Rav Chista, the wife of Rav Chista, mikashto ba'anpe kalata. She got dressed up and she made herself up on Chol HaMoed in front of her daughters-in-law. So she was already not such a young woman, and she was still prettying herself up and making herself up. Yatav Rav Huna bar Chinina kamed Rav Chista. He was sitting before Rav Chista. V'yatav kamar lo shanu ala yalda. It's only true of a young girl. Avas kena lo, an old woman like your wife, she can't be putting on makeup. There's no necessity for her to be putting on makeup. Amalei halukim afilu imcha v'afilu ima d'imech. Says even your mother, or your mother's mother, I mean your grandmother, v'afilu omedet al kivra, even if she's so old, she's like standing over her grave. I mean she's at on her in her deathbed, or she's so old, she can make herself up. Da'amrei inche, bat shichin kebat shit lekal tavla rihata. That a 60-year-old woman is no different than a 6-year-old girl for the sound of the timbrel, she is nimble. Meaning that she gets excited about a celebration. Gets excited about a celebration. She makes herself up. She pretties herself up. It's part of her Simchat Yom Tov. And so Simchat Yom Tov equal applies not just to the young girls, but even to the older women, that they get dressed up and they put their makeup on. It is appropriate and is allowed to be done on Chol HaMoed. Rabbi Yehuda says they cannot put the lime on them, basically the waxing process for removing the hair. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Isha lo tisod, a woman shouldn't do this, mipnei she nivul hula, because it makes her disgusting. It's both painful and disgusting. Amode Rabbi Yehuda, besit shechola lekaplo b'moed, if she puts it on Chol HaMoed, and she'll be able to peel it off on Chol HaMoed, she tofalto b'moed, then she can do it, she'afapi she metzira hi achshav, even though it's painful right now, simcha hi lachazman, when she removes it, it's an added simcha, because the result is so good, and that's a simcha, so we're willing to suffer the temporary pain in order to get the better result afterwards, which will be a greater simcha that will enhance her simcha de yom tov. When it says immediately, Rabbi Yehuda, I sabara, does Rabbi Yehuda really have that logical or that logic? Vatanan. Rabbi Yehuda omer nifreim mehen mishnei shemeitzar. You're allowed to demand payment from them because it causes pain. Amrlo, afoshol pi shemeitzar achshav, semeach hula achar zman. Even though it's painful now, he celebrates after time. This is talking about in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah with regards to transacting with individuals on their day, their celebration of the Avodah Zarah, the Yom Chagam, on their holiday. So on their holiday, you're not allowed to go back and repay their loans or to do business transactions with them where they'll be excited because they're going to get excited and they're going to thank their God for that good transaction for the repayment of money. The question is, can you go collect from them on their holiday? So when you collect from them in their holiday, Rabbi Yehuda says, no problem, go and collect for them because it's a pain. Nobody wants to pay back a loan when you're demanding the money back. That's a negative thing. We have to expend the money and pay back the loan. On the other hand, the Chachamim say that's not true. It might be painful when he has to expend the money, but once he dismisses the debt, once he has paid off the debt, he's going to feel great, and then he will thank his God. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, but it's painful now. So you see, Rabbi Yehuda looks at the current status. He doesn't look at the longer-term outcome or the more holistic view of what's happening over here. So why by Chol HaMoed is he giving this bigger holistic view, and by the payment or repayment, or demanding repayment of a loan, he doesn't see it that way. So Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Hanach lehelchot moed, gotta leave alone hilchot Chol HaMoed, tekulu meitzar achshav v'sameach lachar zman ninhu. That is the nature of melacha on Chol HaMoed. Everything you do on Chol HaMoed is painful, quote-unquote, up front. It's an investment. It's work up front for a bigger payoff in the back end, which is, for instance, cooking on Chol HaMoed. When you cook and you put the things together for the sudar, for the meals on Chol HaMoed. So when you're doing the cooking, when you're doing the preparation, that's an investment. That's a tzar. That's not so much fun. But once you've finished and you're able to benefit from that and eat the food, it's a great simcha. So you see that everything in Chol HaMoed, any melacha that's allowed on Chol HaMoed is for exactly that reason. Because the short-term pain is resultant in a bigger-term gain on Chol HaMoed itself. So that's why the din is different by Chol HaMoed. That's the nature of melocha on Chol HaMoed. Ravina Amar, Kuti Linyan Piron Olam Meitzar. Ravina says this is just a psychological phenomenon. A Kuti, whenever he pays back his loans, he forever is upset about that. He never gets happy that he dismissed or discharged his obligations with regards to the debt. He just doesn't want to have to pay. The fact that he had to pay it, that gets him upset, and that's a permanent state. So there's nothing to discuss over there. Amar Rav Yehuda, Benot Yisrael she'igiu lepirkan, young Jewish girls that reach puberty, v'lo higiu l'shanim, but they're not yet of age. I mean that they've reached puberty prematurely, and they are not of age. So what do they want to do? They want to remove the hair. Now, so aniyot toflot otan besid. The poorer girls, what they do is they put on the lime, the plaster, and they use that to pull it off to remove the hair, basically like waxing. Ashiro toflototan besolit. They use this fine flour, which I guess was a better depilatory and also was less painful. Benot milachim b'shemen amor. And the princesses use shemen amor to do this. Shenamar shisha chodoshim b'shemen amor. By Esther, when they used to prepare the woman by Haggai, Sarit Samelech, to go into the Achashverosh, part of the process was Shisha Chodeshim, 6 months, B'Shemen Amor. My Shemen Amor, what is the Shemen Amor? Puna Bachi Amar, is stacked. It's this stacked. Now, what is this stacked? Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ami Amar, Shemen Zayit, Shlo Yivi Shlish. It's olive oil that has yet to ripen, or olives that have yet to ripen past their point of a third. That olive oil is a good oil to be used in order to soften the skin and to remove the hair on the skin. So that pungency of those olives that are premature, you take that olive oil, that's useful for removing it. But obviously it's a much gentler way to remove the hair than using the plaster or the waxing methodology. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Anpikinon, Shemen Zayit Shelo V'Shlish. This Anpikinon is a Shemen Zayit that has yet to mature or to ripen by a third. V'lamei Sachin Oto, why do you anoint yourself with it? Why is it used? Mashir et ha-sear, u'madin et ha-basar. It removes the hair, and it softens the skin. So that's why it's used. Rabibi Havalei Brato, he had this young daughter. Tzfala Aver Aver. Limb by limb, he put on this process, whatever way he did it. Sounds like he was not a wealthy individual. He did it by using the plaster. Limb by limb, he did this to her. Shakoba Dalid Meozuze. He got for her 400 zuz, meaning that when a individual wanted to marry her, a man who wanted to marry her, was willing to give in 400 zuz to pay into her dowry, in a sense, because she was so beautiful from the process that he had put her through. Havu kuti b'shivute, there was this kuti in his neighborhood, in his chatzer, tafle brato, he also had a daughter, tafle b'chad zimno. He went ahead and he plastered her in one shot. Instead of doing it aver-aver, he did it in one shot to make her just like the daughter of Rabibi. Umeita, and she died from it. Amar, tala Bibi librati. He used to say, Bibi killed my daughter because he just copied him. And by copying him, he thought he would get the same result. But the thing is, he didn't copy him exactly. He did it all at once instead of doing it aver-aver. And so therefore, he got a different result. Amar Rav Nachman, Rabibi, deshati shichra, bayin benate tafla. Says Rabibi, who drinks beer, that's why his daughters needed to have the plaster on them. Anan, Deloshatin, and Shikra. We who do not drink beer, lo bayim benatin tafla. Our daughters don't need this tafla. They're not, what is it called, hairy or prematurely have they reached puberty and so forth. They don't need this tfela. They don't need this taking off the removal of the hair. Rashi says over here, bayim benatin tafla de shechar. Says beer, migadela seyar, grows hair. And it thickens the skin or makes a person more obese or fatter. So the shechar has the effect of being a fattening agent as well as causing hair to grow. And so therefore the Rabibi, who is a beer drinker, had that result with his daughter, and that's why he had to be taflo. But Nachman says, we who don't drink beer, we're not going to have that issue because our daughters don't have that effect of the beer upon them. Okay, we're going to stop over here.